From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña with your state and local news update. The state of Alaska will receive a huge influx of money from the latest federal COVID-19 relief package. Some of that money is going straight to individuals, but it remains to be seen how the state and local governments will use the almost $1.4 billion coming their way. KTOO's Claire Strempel reports.
Money from the American Rescue Plan will come to Alaskans directly and indirectly. The plan includes both aid to individuals and nearly $1.4 billion to Alaska's state and local governments.
Yes, it's significant. Yes, it touches every facet of the economy.
Musin Ghatabi is an associate professor of economy at the University of Alaska Anchorage. He says the money can help get Alaska back on track after the pandemic. But
it doesn't resolve Alaska's structural problems as big as the numbers we're talking about. I don't want to say they're a drop in the bucket because it's not. But Alaska is still in a tough spot.
Let's break the money down. First, there's direct aid. Individual payments of $1,400 are already popping up in Alaskans' bank accounts. Unemployed Alaskans will also receive more money. Then there's the expanded child tax credit. It's a substantial piece of aid, but it's also temporary. In the end, qualifying families could get up to $250 a month per child from July to December of this year. Ghatabi estimates at least 90,000 families in Alaska are eligible.
We've never had something this grand, this broad, and this targeted towards lower income individuals in particular, right? And so, because it's going to obviously make the biggest bang for the buck for the lower income household, meaning, again, think about a family that has two children potentially receiving an additional $500 a month, right?
It has the potential to lift over 12,000 kids out of poverty in Alaska, according to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. But again, that's money those families will only get this year. Then there's the roughly $1.4 billion the state and local governments will have to spend. Ghatabi puts that into perspective.
The most Alaskan answer I can give you is that the PFD in a typical year is more than $1 billion. So that's one way of thinking about it. The other way of thinking about it is that we have a bit more than $1 billion budget gap.
Of that money, over $1 billion goes to the state. That leaves about $230 million at the discretion of local governments. State economist Neil Fried with the Department of Labor says the two pandemic stimulus packages so far are unprecedented in his decade-spanning career. And he says there are some economic indicators that the last stimulus bill, the CARES Act of 2020, had a positive impact.
One sort of very dramatic thing that has happened that's very unusual, given the fact that we're in this recession. You know, we lost over 20,000 jobs, lots of payroll, business activity. But when we look at income, income actually grew last year in 2020 despite that. And that would never happen in your typical recession, which this, of course, is not.
Both Ghatabi and Fried say the sooner Alaskans get past COVID-19, the sooner we can see a meaningful shift in the economy. The takeaway for the relief bill is that families and individuals should see money in their pockets between now and the end of the year. The direction the state and local governments go with their relief dollars, and how that will help individual Alaskans and the state's economy in general, remains to be seen. For KTOO, I'm Claire Strempel.
In other news, a globally significant news story unfolded in Anchorage yesterday as top Biden administration officials held their first in-person talks with senior Chinese diplomats. The meeting drew an international press corps and made headlines around the world. But as Nat Herz reports, it was mostly business as usual in Alaska's largest city.
President Barack Obama visited Alaska in 2015, and when he stayed at the Hotel Captain Cook, the Secret Service erected a beefy security perimeter with concrete roadblocks and sand-filled trucks. None of that was present Thursday, though, for Secretary of State Antony Blinken and National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan. As they met in one of the Captain Cook's ballrooms, there were no metal detectors in sight. At one point, a DoorDash delivery man walked by with a McDonald's order. Then later, a hotel guest sauntered past in workout clothes and said he was completely oblivious to the drama unfolding inside.
I honestly don't know.
Like, what was your impression as you went by?
Something official and big has gone down. That was my impression.
It's the biggest story in the world right now for China, the U.S., and a lot of Asia, too.
Nathan King is the White House correspondent for a Chinese news network who flew to Alaska to cover the summit. He spent the week reporting from Anchorage, interviewing former Governor Bill Walker and looking into COVID-19 and climate change here. The main event was Thursday, though, and it came not long after the U.S. delegation touched down at Anchorage's Ted Stevens International Airport from a trip to meet with allies in Asia. Like former President Trump, the Biden administration has been taking a tough tone on China, but it's described its goals with the country slightly differently, as being based as much on competition as confrontation. King set the stage this way.
For talks with China, they were hastily put together, which shows they actually wanted to meet. As you know, in the last year of the Trump administration, that's why I have gray hair and balding, the tensions were rising between the US and China. And while the policies haven't changed, the rhetoric has come down a little bit, but not a lot.
The meeting began with public opening statements from both sides, and things got tense quickly. Blinken started by airing concerns about China's cyber attacks, crackdowns on ethnic minorities, and what he called economic coercion. One of China's top diplomats responded with his own lecture about human rights in America, citing the Black Lives Matter movement. Then, with the ballroom doors closed, the talks continued in private. While there were no Alaska reporters in sight, the meetings drew a major international press corps, with correspondents from Chinese news agencies, the BBC, the Wall Street Journal, and the New York Times. They swarmed the Chinese delegation when the afternoon session of the meetings broke up.
Are you pressuring the funny way, Joe, on COVID?
The Chinese diplomats hopped into waiting SUVs that whisked them off down Fifth Avenue. The American delegation snuck out of the ballroom from a back door and avoided the clutch of reporters and photographers entirely. Even without much access to the proceedings, King, the TV correspondent, says he's grateful for his trip to Alaska, which has even included a glimpse of the Northern Lights.
I just want to say thank you for hosting us. It's a wonderful place, and I can't wait to bring my family back here for a good vacation. And when I'm not working 20 hours a day.
Ultimately, the talks, which continue Friday, also appeared to be productive. While the New York Times quoted a State Department official criticizing China's opening statements as, quote, grandstanding, the meetings ended up running longer than scheduled, and the same official said the discussion was substantive. As for Alaska-specific takeaways, it's hard to know because Biden administration officials haven't made themselves available for questions. And representatives from both Anchorage's municipal government and Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration told the Anchorage Daily News that they had not received any communications from the Biden administration either. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
State health officials say Petersburg's recent outbreak of COVID-19 looked similar to the rapid spread seen in other parts of rural Alaska that hadn't already seen widespread infection. Those state officials held an online presentation this week to review the outbreak in this Southeast Alaska community and urged continued testing and vaccination. State epidemiologist Dr. Joe McLaughlin compared the spread to a wildfire in a dry forest.
When you have a community that has not seen much activity, like Petersburg, once the virus starts to take a foothold in the community, it can spread like wildfire, and it can spread very quickly. And you can have multiple introductions. And so if you have multiple introductions, you know, one region of the community, another region, then you've got multiple outbreaks that are sort of festering on their own. And, you know, that can really result in widespread transmission within that community fairly quickly.
Petersburg started seeing an increase in cases in mid-February and hit a peak of new cases reported February 24th. The number of active cases was at its highest at 68 on March 3rd. Health officials say the virus was brought into Petersburg by travelers and spread through close contact at bars, restaurants, daycares, and schools. Local schools went to online learning, and some businesses closed temporarily or paused in-person service. Since that peak, case counts have been dropping, and by this week, the number of active cases was down to 10. For more information on this story, you can go to ktoo.org. This is KTOO News.